Well, hello, everybody.
Hello.
How are we doing?
We're back.
We're back.
And our guests are here.
So we have Susan Simon.
Hi, it's Susan Simon. And I brought a guest of mine, who is Nelly Bellotti, visiting from the Veneto in Italy.
Uh-huh.
Came to stateside because her son got married on Sunday in Central Park. Her son, who lives in New York, actually.
Awesome.
Yep.
Welcome.
Here's Nelly.
Thank you very much. Hello, everybody.
So you see, her English is quite perfect because she grew up in London, half English, half Italian.
Ah, okay.
Now has lived in Italy longer than she lived in England. So she's.
And how did you two meet?
We met years ago. We met through when Nelly was dating one of the brothers of good friends of mine. All the brothers were friends of mine. The brothers, their mother, were very good friends of mine, and she was dating one of the boys, so to speak. That's not the person who became her husband eventually. However, we're all still good friends to this day, everyone.
Was this an Italian boy?
All Italian. Husband. I was living in Milan at the time. Uh-huh. And Nelly had just moved to Milan from Paris, from London. True?
We're talking quite a few decades ago.
Yes, <too. laughs>
Milan is a really big, bustling city, isn't it?
Yes, it's a bustling city.
It's the capital of design and fashion in Italy. And finance, too, so it's quite an important town.
I've only known Milan for, like, passing through it in a day or
For a really long time, people just passed through. It was never really a big tourist stop, but I think people are stopping now. Well, the big expo is in Milan now, and people have been going all since it opened. It opened in May. It's a big destination now, but there's a lot to see in Milan. I mean, people who are opera lovers certainly go to Milan because of La Scala. People who are Da Vinci fans go and see The Last Supper. There's an absolutely magnificent Da Vinci exhibit right now in the Palazzo Reale in Milan. But a lot of Milan got destroyed during the war, so it's not as intact as the other big Italian tourist cities.
I remember climbing up to the very tippy top of a huge cathedral.
The Duomo.
It was the Duomo.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It was a number of years ago, too. But, well, welcome, Nelly. This is fun. Are we going to talk about food?
We are going to talk about food. We're going to, there's going to be probably a little bit of violence here because I want, you know, Nelly is 8 years did you say?
3-year
convert to vegetarianism, but vegetarian / pescatarian, meaning that she ate fish until a couple of months ago. But the reason that she became a vegetarian, it was a route that not everybody takes. It was an interesting route. And we can talk about that. And then we can talk about things that we can, vegetarian kind of food that we can eat if we're missing meat, the kind of protein that we can, because we need a lot of protein in our diets. And sometimes people who convert to vegetarianism forget about the protein, don't get enough protein.
Mm.
So Nelly, you're on. You're going to tell us about how you became a vegetarian, and it may get political.
Political? Is there any violence involved?
It's all violence.
Should we send the children away from the radio? Jake, you can stay.
Yes.
Okay. Here we go.
Interesting.
I always go to the Venice Film Festival, and about 3 years ago, all the films are very, very violent. Not necessarily towards animal, though there were a few violent films with animal
subjects.
Violence.
Mm-hmm.
But the main film that won the Golden Lion, which is like the Oscar for the best film, was A Kim Ki Duk. And if there are any film cult people out there, will know exactly the genre. Was about a loan shark, and to get his money back, he would get all these very poor people to make insurance and would cut off their right hand so they could claim the insurance. And this was very graphic, though the story was about a mother and a son, but but the graphic part, that was just the what turned me completely off eating any meat.
Was this a fictional film, One Hopes?
One Hopes, but, you know, it's Korea. He's a Korean
director. And what year is it supposed to be in the film?
It's a date, current. Yes, but these were very, very poor people living in little shacks and little alleyways, and they could... It was just the poverty and the violence and everything just turned me off. But I have to say, leading towards that, whenever I had some meat, I was thinking, oh, am I eating a thigh or a leg or whatever? It was... I guess I was meant to stop eating meat. And then recently I stopped eating fish as well. But I'm still eating eggs and milk, cheese, as long as you don't have to kill any animals.
Well, are you getting enough protein at this point?
Well, I feel very good, so I guess I am.
What kinds of way, we're talking about this, in the car, we just come back from. Nala's up visiting Hudson for a few days, which is nice because she comes up to Hudson whenever she's in the States, or not whenever, but at least once a year. And we've gone off on a couple of. I'm taking your places other than Hudson. We just went off to Connecticut, the northwest part of Connecticut, which is absolutely gorgeous right now. The drive with the leaves, and we were talking on the way back about what kinds of things she eats instead of, you know, where she gets her protein. What kinds of foods? So you can talk a little bit about it, and then maybe I'll expound.
Well, it's basically
expand.
Eggs. Yes. Eggs and cheese, and then there's all the grains and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the time being, I'm still eating eggs and milk, so we'll see how it develops. It's just one step at a time, really.
What about nuts, like nut butters, peanut butter?
Almond butter.
Delicious.
Almond butter.
The trouble is, whenever I eat nuts, I have a few, and then I end up eating the whole packet. It's like when you have peanuts at a drinks party, you just keep eating the whole bowl.
But you're getting more protein. That's my excuse, anyway.
Then the night that Nally arrived, which was Tuesday night, I know we didn't want her. She was exhausted from having all the festivities of. Oh, did we mention that she came to Italy because her son got married? Yes, so there are a lot of festivities surrounding that, and then the train up here. And I knew that she didn't want to go out to dinner, so I made a butternut squash soup, vegetarian butternut squash soup. Did not use chicken broth, which I know a lot of people do for it. And made a really rich vegetable broth, which is a very, very good substitute. And you can create the richness of the broth by caramelizing vegetables in butter and olive oil. You know, I put chopped carrots, chopped celery, chopped onions, a little garlic, and put it in sizzling butter and olive oil and let it cook for at least 10 minutes till it got very, you know, like nutty brown. Mm. That creates flavor. Then dump water into it. Bring that water to a boil. And then bring it down and let the water sizzle and be simmer and be infused by those flavors. That's the broth. And then you add the butternut squash. And
uh-huh.
I added fresh ginger because we've got that wonderful fresh ginger in the Hudson Farmers Market right now. You know, the fresh ginger, the Columbia County ginger, which is amazing, highly flavored, and that and
now what is ginseng? Is ginseng is not a from the ginger family,
no.
Is it?
It's kind of. It's a root, and it you know the second biggest producer of ginseng in the world are the Catskill Mountains. In the world,
I know that
really?
There's a lot of
yes.
ginseng,
and the, I mean
over
there are people that are ginseng farmers up here that are stealth ginseng farmers because. It's so easy to steal that stuff and sell it for whatever, $20, $50 an ounce, not a pound. You know, they get high prices. And there are ads, I think, in Chinese language newspapers for Catskill Mountain ginger.
Is it used mostly in tea or?
You know, medicines and,
medicines.
You know, infusions, all sorts of uses. Mm. Interesting that Sue Decker from Blue Star Farm, who grows the ginger, is now growing turmeric, which is also a root.
Oh, turmeric is a root.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Very interesting. I'm not quite sure what to do with it yet, but somebody told me last night how a friend of his has used it and then smashed it up with a mortar and pestle, and it turns yellow. I mean, right now it's like a pale white root. It looks a little bit like ginger.
Hmm.
But it's a little bulb thing with little bulb shoots
so
off.
So when you break it,
break it down.
It's like this is really going to date me. Years ago when butter was rationed during the war, I won't say which war. oleomargarine,
yes,
could be purchased in this white block. It was all white.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a little pill of yellow color or orange color in the packet. And kids were given the chore of smushing the plastic packet and break, you broke that little pill inside and it would color the, but you had to mix it, you had to
and it was, do you think it was turmeric?
It could have been. I wonder.
Probably.
Could have been. Because turmeric, so what I'm saying is when you get a turmeric root, you probably, it somehow breaks the,
you have to break it, and
the
then
color,
according to our friends last night, it becomes that yellow that turmeric is known for.
Mm-hmm.
I was waiting for it to dry out, but I guess you don't have to wait for it to dry out. So, go ahead.
Going back to the butternut squash soup, which is absolutely delicious. So when you put it in the bowl, then you add some apples, which are stewed in butter.
I kind of pan roasted them, so they got a little crunchy on the outside. First, a big blob of Greek yogurt into the hot butternut squash soup, gingered buttercup, big blob of Greek yogurt, and then the
almonds,
the roasted apples.
Yes, and then the almonds,
and then crumbled almonds.
Oh, it's delicious!
She always makes me so hungry. I roasted some butternut squash the other night, and it was so sweet. It was absolutely incredibly delicious.
Right. It's a very, very versatile squash. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you that tomorrow's column.
In the Register Star.
And Daily Mail.
By Susan Simon.
And the Daily Mail. This recipe for the butternut squash will appear in that. And also the other recipe is a butternut squash creme caramel.
Have you had that too, Nellie?
I have had it too, but I wish I was here tomorrow for it.
Well, it's just the recipe. Anyway, but there are other ways of getting your protein that aren't vegetables. I mean, you talk about grains. I mean, there are the grain that contains the most protein of all of them is quinoa.
Right.
It's very protein rich, and of course, it's completely versatile. It can be made into many things. I don't know, Nala, have you ever made like patties, like papettini with quinoa, which is very, to make a meatball with the quinoa as the base, and just put other vegetables in it, chopped onions, sautéed onions, or quinoa salads, or then you can go into the other grains, like spelt. Farro, wheat berries, and mix it with beans, and you get very protein. And then, if you want to continue to kick up that salad, nuts, cheese, sautéed vegetables, lots of fresh herbs, and you get a very bright, delicious meal out of it. And you're getting lots of protein.
I cook quinoa, and I use the leftover in a green salad. Just throw it in; it gives good texture to to the salad.
Yeah, I mean,
and it tastes good.
I don't think vegetarianism has to be boring. I think that those days are gone by when people sort of turned up their nose and frowned on vegetarianism. It can be very creative. I think I would start to panic to be completely vegan, if we had to cut out dairy and eggs from the diet.
Yeah, that would be really hard to do. Are you planning to do that, Nellie?
I think it might come just naturally. I don't know. I'm not planning on anything. I just take it as it comes and whatever. But I must say that I do enjoy going to restaurants a lot, and I found that in New York especially, the old restaurants I used to go to have sort of, the quality has gone down a bit, whereas all the new vegetarian restaurants, they're so much more creative, and I found some really wonderful ones with incredible tastes. So I think it's going to become more popular, or at least people will be more attracted to vegetarian and vegan restaurants, is my feeling anyway.
Now, I think the statistics on meat consumption, industrial meat consumption in this country has gone down. I think I've talked about this many times, but I think I eat more meat since I've moved up here than I ever ate in New York City, because up here at least I know what kind of a life it had. Were you saying something?
I was just saying where it's coming from. Yeah,
where it's coming from. I realize that it's still being killed, which is what Natalie objects to, but at least it's had this wonderful life. It hasn't been, you know, in a harness in a one spot where it can't turn around, where it can't sit down. It's had a horrible life. It's still not excused, but I, oh boy, you can get some pretty good burgers with local meat.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I eat much less meat than I used to.
Uh-huh.
I just don't like cooking it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bother.
Mm-hmm.
I just live off of meat. I don't know. I just love the taste of meat.
Do you eat local meat?
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah. Yep.
Grass-fed beef and all that?
Well, and I either eat it out or I cook it outside, because I don't like splashing up messing my kitchen. I just have a grill right outside my kitchen door, and even all year round I just go out there. And I put a griddle on top of the grill so I can just go sear whatever I'm going to do, if I'm going to do it. I think I'm eating more meat up here because I'm wondering about the fish that you get up here. It's not quite as fresh as what you're going to get closer to the seaport, to
right.
the source.
That's right.
Which I would, you know, I'd love to be able to.
Except there is a fish farm here, or there was, and now there's. It's been taken over. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're producing fish mm-hmm. yet or not, but.
I don't even, you know, there's also controversial fish farming, because what they're feeding the fish, you know, farmed fish would not be my first choice. Mm. I'm saying, you know, here we are.
Well, we shouldn't talk about meat
talk about other things that you make, because you were telling me in the car, the kinds of things, you know, your tarts. That you make vegetable tarts and pastas.
Yes, there's a terrific recipe for a tomato tartatin, which is absolutely delicious, and that I make quite often when I have guests or whenever I don't have guests.
Very luckily, she lives in Italy, where tomatoes are always...
Well, I grow my own, so there's no insecticide and all those things.
Right. Right.
And then, farro salad's a very good pasta, which I make with... A good tip is if you pick up a lot of basil, or if you grow your own in the summer, then you can make pesto, and I freeze it in ice cube containers, and I keep it all winter long. And then when you're making the pasta, you just take two or three cubes out, put them in a bowl on top of the boiling water, and when the pasta is ready, you just mix it together. It's really delicious, and you've made it yourself, and you know where it all comes from.
See, Italy were the Italians were the original farm to table. Don't you think?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yes, because the farms are near the.
Everyone has their own farm.
Well, it used to be, when I first moved to Italy many decades ago, it was that way. And people shopped every day. You got bought fresh food every day for what you were going to consume that day.
Those wonderful markets in all the cities.
But then it became industrialized, you know, as years go by, it got very industrial, just like here. And, you know, people wanted to go to the supermarkets because they were new, and they bought things that were in cellophane packages and things that came from all over Europe, peppers from Holland, tomatoes from Israel. You know, it was very globalized. Mm. And I think people are returning now, aren't they? They're doing the same thing that we started to do a few years ago. It's just cyclical.
Well, I've been to Italy a couple of times, not for very long either time, but I have to say it doesn't matter where you are, it seems to me, or if you're in the humblest, you know, street vendor or hole-in-the-wall kind of place. The food is so good.
Oh,
every
yes.
place you go in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Answer. Answer, why is that?
maybe it hasn't become so industrialized as it has here. Uh-huh. I don't know.
It's terroir. It's terroir, just like wines and olive oils. It's the earth and how long the earth has been being fed certain, you know, it's not just that the earth has been fertilized and fed. It's the, whatever, what is it called? There's a technical term for the stuff that slides off the mountains and slides off the hills into the valleys. You know, that's why the Hudson Valley is so fertile for all the stuff that comes down from the Catskills, from the Taconics, from the Berkshires into the valley and makes the soil so rich. So it's not only the fertilizer that we're putting on it, you know, the natural, whether it's animal manure, but it's the stuff that's coming out of the glacial runoff or whatever. That I know there's a more technical term than that. But, you know, Italy is this, you know, is this country that's just filled with hills and mountains and things pour into valleys. There's not a lot of flat land in Italy. I think the flattest land, contiguous flat land, is in the region of Lombardy. Which is where, you know, the Bassa Padana and where all the, there's a lot of cheese that comes out of that area because the cows have flat land to graze on. Hmm. The rest is just mountains and valleys, the rest of the country, if you look at a map of it. And then this slide off that comes into the valleys, you know, makes for very, very rich soil.
Someone told me that you should always use, I don't make my own pasta. I'm sure you do.
No, I do not. Too much
but,
time.
that it doesn't matter what brand. I could buy the cheapest brand of pasta as long as it comes from Italy.
Correct.
And that's because of the kind of wheat they use?
Well,
sorry?
It could be the water as well.
Yeah, it's a lot, even though a lot of the pasta is made in Italy, there's a lot of it is American wheat. However, you're right about it being... I had this discussion last week with a friend of mine. He's screaming about a certain Italian brand of pasta that's very popular and advertised a lot. Am I allowed to say the name of it?
Yes.
Barilla. That was to be the pasta of Italy. It's made in America now. So he was screaming that his wife bought Barilla. Why did you do that? You could have bought Pastine, which is a cheaper brand, but it's made in Italy.
Steen, I have to remember.
I don't know. You can go into any supermarket and look at some of the brand names. Even the one, you know, here are these pastas that are lit up and coming at you because they're made in Italy, like De Cecco and Dal Verde, and you think Barilla is, but it's not. Probably made in New Jersey.
But I've been using Barilla. I have to tell you. If they use the same wheat, if they import the wheat from Italy and then make it into, you don't think they do?
No, they're importing
America's famous for its wheat fields and for its cotton, so there's all this abundance of ingredients. I'm probably the American Barilla made in America is probably better than the Italian one made in Italy. Susan's shaking
Susan
her head,
does not
but
agree.
I would.
No, I'm pasta snob about, and I get Settaro, which is made outside of Naples, where they are very famous for making.
Outside of Naples is famous for all those small brand pasta, cult little labels like boutique pasta. I guess you could call them.
Yeah. I get it. You can buy it. I can get it online. I get it online and have it delivered enough for 6 months at a time.
Artisanal pasta.
Yes. Well, it's. Yes. It is. It's not that much more expensive than what you're buying in the supermarket, and it's well worth it. It's the taste, the flavor is notably different. Mm. It's dried pasta, and it comes in a lot of different shapes.
Well, thank you for making me see the light.
Yeah.
And see the pasta. And taste the pasta. I have to have, you know, a pasta tasting party or something.
Yeah. Why not?
We can...
Blind tasting. We can do that sometime here.
Well, this has been such fun.
Oh, yeah. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Si, si, è vero.
And if you have any other recipes you want to share with us, I mean, pasta, to me, you can take any vegetable and saute it in olive oil and garlic and put it on pasta, and it's a wonderful dish.
Well, I have to and maybe Nellie will describe this recipe that it used to be that every time I arrived in Italy, the first day that I arrived in Italy, she would have a pasta that she would serve me, and it was that you'd make
the fresh tomato pasta.
Yes.
So you should marinate it for a few hours, so make it in advance. And what I do is I peel some tomatoes, probably, I think you call them Roma, mm-hmm. here.
Right.
Take the seeds out, peel them, chop them up, and put them in a bowl with olive oil, garlic, parsley, or basilico as well, and I now add capers and salt and pepper and a little bit of peperoncino.
Red
and you just let it marinate for about 2 or 3 hours.
Mm.
And then you put it on either fresh pasta when it's cooked or farro. It makes a delicious farro salad.
But you don't have to cook.
Yes, you have to cook the farro.
You don't have to cook the tomato mixture.
No.
Yes,
fresh.
I've done that, but not with as many ingredients, and that sounds wonderful.
Also, adding black olives is delicious as well.
Yeah, it's really, really
sold.
Sold, right?
Yes.
Yes. So, the possibilities are endless. We can, go through this, and you can make, even if you're doing pastry, pump it up a little bit by, adding some whole wheat flour instead of all white flour, adding spelt flour instead of all, slowly integrate other ingredients into your diet. Rather than just, stopping, going full stop and then starting something new.
Right.
Do it gradually. Mm. Like you change your dog's food. You're supposed to do that gradually.
Oh. It doesn't work with cats.
No.
Nothing works with cats.
Anyway.
Well, this is great. I love that pasta recipe.
Yeah.
If you remember, pecorino and capers and all those other things.
Yeah, it's nice to change the cheese too. Change the cheese a little bit. Not always use parmigiano, but to use, other kinds of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Even on pasta, use romano, the great grating cheese of Lombardy, which I was just talking about, which has all these, the flattest land in all of Italy is Grana Padana, which is the mother of parmigiano.
Uh-huh.
It's the hard grating cheese. It's aged. Mm. Wonderful. Wonderful. Mm. Anyway.
Oh, well, as usual, now I'm starving. I'm famished.
Yep. I'm with you, Ellen.
So we need to say more?
Well, I would love to go on forever, but we have
like 2 minutes.
News,
yeah.
The newsroom is beckoning.
The newsroom is beckoning. Oh, nice to be here. See you again.
Thank you. And I'm so glad you came, Nellie. It was just great fun.
Thank you very much for having me. And I guess I should say ciao to everybody.
Goodbye.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Ciao. Ciao. Ciao.
Ciao. Ciao.
Come again. Thank you.
Grazie.